You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
The McDonald Commission was established by the Canadian government in the 1970s. The commission investigated allegations that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police engaged in illegal activities. Those activities included wiretapping, opening of mail, and even forgery. The main thrust of the McDonald Report was that security intelligence work should be separated from policing. The Canadian Security Intelligence Service, or CSIS, was the result of that inquiry. But questions are now being raised about this organization. The People's Commission is launching a public campaign against Canada's security agency, accusing it of harassing and threatening its members. The People's Commission network says it has the support of nearly 70 collectives, federations, and unions, and wants its members to stop cooperating with CSIS. Mary Foster is with the People's Commission, and she's joining me by phone from Montreal. Hello, Mary, and welcome to Red Eye.
Hi, thanks.
The separation of policing from security gathering was supposed to cure the abuses of the security services, but recent events would seem to indicate that that's not the case. What sort of controversies or illegal activities has CSIS been involved in?
Numerous things. One is, I'm not sure whether you can qualify this as illegal, but certainly controversial and unacceptable, which is a pattern of visits to unannounced visits to people's homes and their workplaces, which have the effect of being very intimidating and can be qualified as harassment visits.
What about things like I've heard details about violation of lawyer-client privilege and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a number of high-profile scandals that have made it into the media as well, in which CSIS has been centrally involved. I think what you're referring to is it came out in security certificate cases, Mr. Harkat's case, Mr. Majoub's case, and others, that CSIS had a policy of listening into conversations between lawyers and clients, which violates a pretty fundamental rule of what constitutes a fair trial. When that came out in court, the federal court did slap their hand and tell them to cease doing it, but then, unbelievably, apparently this behavior continued, and that has also come out in court, that CSIS did not, despite clear directive from the court, cease listening into to conversations between lawyers and their clients, which are supposed to be protected. There's a number of these kind of scandals that CSIS has been involved in, and that's one of them. Another is visiting people who've either been deported or been handed over to other states or been arrested abroad, visiting them while they're in situations where of arbitrary detention, where CSIS has every reason to know that they are being subject to abuse or torture. So, I mean, one of the higher profile cases in that regard is Abu Sufyan Abdurazak, someone who was kept effectively in exile in Sudan for years. He was arrested. And shortly after his arrest in Sudan, CSIS agents went to visit him while he was being held by the security intelligence in Sudan. So, and obviously Omar Khadr, that's another situation which CSIS visited him while he was in a situation where he was at risk or actively being subject to ill treatment and torture.
Not as serious as that, but still a concern are the unannounced visits, which you just referred to. Who is receiving these visits? Who's being targeted for this kind of intimidation?
Well, yeah, I mean, these visits were the immediate impetus for our campaign. I mean, for many years we've been hearing, as we're working around immigration and so-called national security cases, we've been hearing about CSIS abuses, CSIS harassment, visits, sort of a chill effect that was happening in Muslim communities and Arab communities in particular, but other targeted communities as well. More recently, in 2010, there were in 2009 and 2010, there were pattern of visits to people who were involved in organizing against the G20 protests and against the Olympics, the Winter Olympics that took place in Vancouver. So this pattern of visits of activists was the immediate reason that we launched our campaign of non-cooperation.
Is there no oversight body tasked with ensuring that CSIS complies with the law and doesn't harass ordinary citizens?
When CSIS was set up, it was set up with the Security Intelligence Review Committee, which reports to Parliament, which is supposed to review CSIS activities and report to Parliament on whether they've complied with their legal framework and if there are any issues or concerns. The problem with CIRC, or the Security Intelligence Review Commission is called CIRC, it's an acronym. The problem with CIRC is, first of all, CSIS has not always been honest with CIRC, so we found out that in some cases CSIS actually lied to CIRC. Many issues here. It's not a very transparent body, so it reports to Parliament, but a lot of its hearings are held in secret, so they follow a lot of the same secrecy rules that CSIS does, so it's not bringing some of these issues to public light in the way it should be, and it's hearing CSIS's side more than other side, necessarily, because of the confidentiality. Moreover, CIRC can report, but it has no power to implement any of the recommendations it makes. It simply brings those to public attention, and then that's it. So, in a lot of cases, CSIS has simply ignored this. So, for example, CSIS, for many years, CIRC was reporting that CSIS had a policy of systematically destroying its records. But then using those in a certain case. So if any time CSIS passes information on into a process where those are used either in court or an immigration process, the actual underlying records no longer existed. They were destroyed. So CIRC expressed concerns about this, but it just kept happening because CIRC had no effective power to enforce the recommendation that they ceased doing so, and apparently Parliament didn't care or didn't want to insist that CSIS cease doing so. So it wasn't until Adil Sharkawi, one of the people who are fighting against security certificates, brought this issue to the Supreme Court that it became an issue and a new policy was apparently adopted. So that's another problem with CIRC. And the last point is generally CIRC shares a lot of the same analysis or prejudices that CSIS does about national security, about who's a danger, about which kind of security should be prioritized, whose security, should be priorities. All of those are questions that we hope are going to be brought into public debate in the campaign that we're working on.
What about that national security argument? I mean, you sometimes hear people defend CSIS or similar organizations, you know, the CIA or whatever, by pointing out that we all have threats to national security and dangers from abroad and internal dangers as well. Basically, I think they're saying that organizations like CSIS are a kind of evil necessity. How do you respond to that kind of argument?
Well, I mean, necessity for whom? I mean, there's no track record that they have assisted to protect Canadians in any way. There's no evidence to suggest that they have. I mean, what's the biggest terrorist or the only, you know, in that their definition of terrorism, the only terrorist incidents that took place here was the Air India bombing. CSIS was was involved in that and made a huge mess, destroyed the evidence. No one was ever brought to trial. A CSIS mole was apparently part of the cell, which was accused of having planned these attacks. There's all sorts of real problems, and the attacks were not stopped. Many, many people died. So if that's the kind of security we're talking about, well, they certainly didn't help in that case. There's a lot of sort of rhetoric about threats coming from inside Canada, but everything that they've actually brought to court that we know that they're involved in all of the cases I can think of that I know they've been involved in, when they've been brought to court, they've been thrown out. So I mean, for example, we can think of Sharkari's case that I just mentioned, security certificate detainee. His case was thrown out. He was put through a security certificate process for more than 6 years, kept in prison under house arrest, and then it was thrown out. Hassan Amri, the same thing, was thrown out as baseless in the end. There's a lot of talk of these threats, but then when you actually look at them, they seem to fall apart. So even prior to those questions, I mean, they're actually the behavior that CSIS is engaging in these kind of visits and putting pressures on communities and being present in religious institutions like mosques is creating a real sense of insecurity in specific communities where people feel like they're under surveillance, feel like they shouldn't express certain opinions because they are seen as suspects, such as, for example, you know, solidarity with the Palestinian struggle. That's, you know, it's a little scary to talk about that because that's one of the questions that CSIS has been asking community members: where do you stand on Israel, as a kind of a litmus test for who they think is suspicious or not, apparently. So it's that kind of behavior, those kind of questions that are introduced, make people afraid, and they attack solidarity within communities. If people are not sure who they're talking to, it creates suspicion and fear of one another, which is extremely negative, and it's not in our security interests as communities to have those kind of fears and suspicions of each other.
The People's Commission is now advising its members, it's advising people not to speak with CSIS. Do we, ordinary citizens, do we have that right not to speak with CSIS?
Mm-hmm. CSIS is not a policing agency. That was one of the things that was set up when it was set up. It's an intelligence gathering agency. So in no circumstance does it have the right to compel you to talk, unlike policing forces. So if CSIS by itself, without police accompaniment, asks you to talk to them, a CSIS agent asks you to talk to them, you can say no, and we suggest you should say no. That would be voluntary. However, CSIS has ways of trying to make people talk by perhaps frightening them, perhaps using powers that they do have in immigration processes to try and put people in a corner where they feel they have no choice but to talk to them, or just a sort of general intimidation. The one place where people are put in a situation where it really is strongly in their interest to talk to them is if they are in immigration proceedings and they're called in for a formal hearing in CSIS offices. In that case, they could say no, but if they do, they jeopardize their immigration proceedings because CSIS has a screen. It does a security check on people applying for permanent resident status. So you do need to go in, and in those cases, we strongly suggest that you do not go alone. You go with someone you've accompanied. If possible, talk to a lawyer beforehand about what kind of questions will come up. If you can go with a lawyer, that's a good idea too, someone you trust and someone who's aware of CSIS and the way it uses these kind of interviews, sometimes as fishing expeditions that have little or nothing to do with your actual immigration file, but about trying to gather information on people around you or your own political thoughts.
Well, Mary, thanks for joining us today and also for your work in setting up CSIS Watch.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for inviting us to your show and invite people to have a look at our website. We've tried to put out a bunch of material that will help people safely interact with CSIS and a bunch of background information that might also be of use. So if you check out our website, I think you can find a lot more than what I just talked about.
Yeah, it's an excellent site, and it is very informative, and I will point people in that direction.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks again.
Okay.
I've been speaking with Mary Foster. She's with the People's Commission. To learn more about the CSIS boycott, you can go to peoplescommission.org.